Movie Mavericks.
The Movie Mavericks Podcast.
Movie Mavericks, speaking of fucking long, uncut European cocks.
The Movie Mavericks Podcast.
Now for your hosts, Jason and Trevor.
I can't wait.
Hey now, everybody. Welcome to episode 294 of the Movie Mavericks Podcast. I'm Trevor Anderson. Sending you over to Jason Rugard. He's got a rundown for us.
On today's show, we'll be doing some trivia, some talking about movies and reviews, and a little bit of trailer.
Nonsense.
If you don't know how this podcast works,
none of that is happening.
300 episodes, then shame on you, and shame on us for not informing you. The game is gone. If you haven't noticed, Box Office Ace did not make it to 2016, but the trivia did. So we're going to start off a little trivia here.
Okay.
Are you warmed up? You ready? You get a little calisthenics in?
Yeah.
All right. I know you're an aficionado of home video. You collect. You're a collector.
I'm way too young. That's beyond my time. I don't know what you're talking about. What's home video? Video?
People used to have these cards. They walked into buildings and left with things and brought them back days later.
What's a building?
Remember late fees?
I never leave the house. Yeah, late fees. Yeah. Okay. What do you get? What's your trivia? Home video trivia.
The first movie released on DVD, what was it?
I feel like I should know it, but I don't. I can't recall. I really don't know. So it's going to be something terrible, right?
I'm going to give you a guess.
Oh, boy.
It was a flipper disc.
But there's a lot of flipper discs.
I believe it was a flipper disc.
It probably was. Stargate?
Oh, it's a good guess, but no, that was a flipper disc. That was a shit.
There were a bunch of flipper discs, so yeah.
It was actually Twister.
Twister.
It was the first movie that was
I knew it was something horrible.
Yeah, right.
Something totally not worth it.
But it makes sense in the because that was like kind of a visual effects breakthrough film at the time, and I guess they were just trying to push that as fast as possible. And I remember seeing that next to the VHS and thinking, what the hell is that thing?
And yeah, you don't really want to see Twister in high def. The special effects don't hold up.
Well, I mean, it's funny that we consider a non-anamorphic flipper disc high def, but it's just digitized, if anything. It's just def. Let's move on and talk about some things that are going on in the movie world here. Latest is that Deadpool, recently rated R, has now been banned in China, which is a fancy way of saying it didn't get past the censors and won't be allowed to play there in that short period of time, that
good.
30 days. But
that means it's going to be good.
I think so, too. I think this isn't going to be some sort of puss out, actually. I'm starting to become more and more interested in it.
Yeah, I'm ready for another – I'm ready for an R-rated movie. Where are they at? Where they go? They've left me.
Did you see the emoji poster that Fox put out for this in some areas?
No,
I
didn't.
The skull and the pile of shit.
Oh, I have seen that, yeah.
In the L. Well, apparently that came from a conversation between Ryan Reynolds. If you follow him on his social media at all.
Oh, a pile of shit came from that conversation with Ryan Reynolds, I believe.
No, his picture, he texted the heads of the marketing at Fox and said, I bet you guys would never have the balls to put this on a poster, and sent them that very thing, those emojis and an L, and then they put the poster up. and he documented it on his Instagram, so he gave him credit. But I also like that they've been doing, because it's coming out on February 14th, they've been doing a lot of those
Valentine's
kind of, yeah, those Day Valentine's
things, the cheese. Yeah.
Their love will last forever.
Yeah, make it look like a Nicholas Sparks movie.
I think that is quite clever, you know, what they're doing there, so. At least they're having some fun. This has got to be the longest campaign run-up to a movie of all time. I feel like they've been promoting this for well over 2 years.
They've been keeping it fresh, though, at least.
Yeah, it's like I said, at least it's not brain dead. It's clever. It's not just mechanical marketing.
Yeah.
All right, what else we got here?
Speaking of brain dead.
Oh, yeah. Well, Vin Diesel or Fast and Furious?
Yeah, take your pick. This point. So we got Furious 8 coming at us. We got a title and a location, right? What are they?
It's going to be Fast 8 to complement Furious 7, right?
It should be
ridiculous.
It should be F8. It should be the letter F, the number 8, and the letter S, and the letter T.
It's way more clever than anything that they've thought of.
Feast. Doesn't make any sense. It should just be that.
It should just say, fuck off. Give us $7. This is going to become like a riot. Everyone's going to see this. It's going to be a huge fucking grocer for no reason. It's going to be coming to New York, it looks like, with the New York skyline on the teaser poster. So Vin Diesel announced this today on his Facebook page, which amazingly has like 90 million followers. And this guy is Facebook.
Yeah, people like Vin Diesel.
It is huge. And I like the guy too, but they act like that. It has some sort of impact on his movies. And as we saw, it didn't help The Last Witch Hunter. So.
Yeah. People seem to desert Vin Diesel pretty quickly.
I know
as far as movies go.
Part 2 and 3, but he is now going to be reprising this role for the 6th time. And that's getting up. This looks like there's no end in sight. It's starting to get up there in the.
No, we got what? I mean, they're talking spinoffs, and they're going deep in spinoffs too. It's pretty crazy. Like Michelle Rodriguez spinoffs was the latest thing I heard. Obviously, you know, not real at this point, but. The fact that anyone is seriously thinking about this is, come on, really?
I'm just saying, if he reprises this role one more time, then he's getting up there with Stallone and Rocky and Shatner, you know, things like that, where people are, you know, Jackman with the Wolverine character, things that like rarefied air in time.
Which could easily happen.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, he could be doing this 10, 11 times.
Yeah, after that, the momentum from the last one, yeah.
And he's following it up with XXX2, The Return of Xander Cage.
Yeah, that one I'm excited.
I would have been if this was 2004. But now
it's
we're
fine. It's 2015.
About,
what else is new? I mean,
it's actually 2016. This one will be actually 17. So you'll be writing that
it
on your
is.
Paper still.
It's January. What do you want?
But this won't premiere until next year. So I don't know. That's 15 years after the original.
That's fine. That's fine with me. It'll be like a new movie.
Well, yes, on the all-new adventure.
I just hope I'm just going to be looking for the nod to Ice Cube.
Remember that when he tried to be an action hero for like two movies with Ghost of Mars and
XXX2?
As much as I like Ice Cube, maybe one of my favorite rappers of all time, but good God, that was a bad decision to put him in that movie. Just bombarded the franchise. All right, what do we have next? Ronda Rousey. The MMA fighter who recently lost is cast in the new Tina Fey comedy "Do Nothing Bitches." That's a phrase that Rousey made very famous with her attributing to lazy girls out there. And this is going to be a story about some lazy housewives that are sent to a militarized boot camp to get toughened up, and Rousey is going to be their instructor.
Hey.
This sounds like,
every other Tina Fey movie
a formulaic home run. Then I don't know what else to say. I mean, something that's going to make a lot of money and probably will be
this will probably work.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like something Goldie Hawn would have done back in the day.
Yeah.
Private Benjamin.
I don't have anything to say about this. Yeah, I mean, this is Tina Fey at this point, right? She's good at this kind of stuff. I think she's learned to have a broader appeal than she has had in the past, and, yeah, probably smart.
I think she's a safer alternative to Amy Schumer's kind of raunch right now, so I think that's where she lies. Next, we have Christian Bale, who recently was cast as Enzo Ferrari in Michael Mann's biopic on the legendary car maker. This is now going to be the second big movie that he's dropped out of after Steve Jobs, because Bale says that he is seriously concerned about his health over the weight gain issue of the movie. Surprising, I guess, but not really, considering he's gone up and down, and that can obviously...
Yeah, but they all... Yeah. I mean, that
Tom Hanks
a toll.
Got diabetes from doing that. So, I mean, I understand why he doesn't want to continue to do that.
Has said that that's a bad idea. That's really hard to do anyways.
Russell Crowe has said that. I mean, a lot of people.
Sylvester Stallone's said it's hard. It sounds hard, too, especially on the thing that's hard about this, I think, specifically is the amount of time they have in which they have to do this.
Yeah, it's crash dieting both ways.
Yeah, so it's really... insane, yeah, to try and do this in the amount of time that they need to be prepared to get on set.
And the time they spend in this form is not that much longer, you know, not that long anyways. They're only in this form for 3 to 6
weeks.
No, and
then they have to get right back into shape again, you know.
Right, for the next role. And that obviously is not something the body is meant to do. And Bale has pushed his body to the extremes. It's been well documented in all sorts of movies.
Yeah, so he's getting older now, so it makes sense, right? I mean, Tom Hanks has said he'll never do it again. Obviously, he's older than Christian Bale. But there has to come a point, right, when you just kind of say, all right, I'm good.
And, yeah, let's try acting now.
Apparently we've reached that point with Christian Bale.
All right, next we have the Jumanji remake gets its director with Jake Kasdan, the son of Lawrence Kasdan, writer of, or I guess co-writer of the new Star Wars movie and the previous Indiana Jones movies and Star Wars movies. This is, I guess, a good thing in the sense that it's in hands of a capable writer because he's proven to be capable, but Sex Tape was terrible. Zero Effect was great. I don't really know where I feel about Jake Kasdan anymore, and I'm a little concerned that this is supposed to premiere on Christmas of this year. So they haven't shot a frame yet. I imagine it's going to be very visually effects heavy. So, I mean, you think they're going to make that date, first of all? You think that this is out in 11 months?
Well, it could be. I mean, what's the difference between making this and any other big budget movie at this point? You know, the crew knows what to do. I really don't think, directors are interchangeable at this point. You tell me what about that last Star Wars movies had J.J. Abrams stamp on it. I mean, none of it, right? So I think they're really, the push to make a movie that is just, you know, flat as far as having, you know, any hand of God in it, am I wrong? I mean, that's what they're doing, right?
Well, I think what we need to recognize too slowly is that they're starting to creep into the 90s on the remakes. You notice this with Point Break,
sure,
Jumanji. And the 90s were a period when movies started getting really slick for the first time with all the beautiful cinematography. I mean, they were getting there in the 80s, but they really got in the mid 90s really, really slick. And they're, you know, almost what they resemble today outside of some major visual effects changes that happened with The Matrix and a couple other movies. But really with that slickness, it's almost the same thing. So it's hard to improve, especially with the Point Break I saw this. It's hard to improve already on that because they're not these things that are lacking so much because these movies still hold up in a lot of cases.
You need a film. Right? It's a piece of art. You have to decide, I guess, whether this is art or if it's a commercial output of some sort, right? Because that's really what's happening here. You know, this is just business versus art, and really business is winning at this point. And I say that only because there's no difference between these movies, right? We're really coming in. I mean, music has the same problem right now, right? And has had for a while as well, where everything's sounds the same.
Well, you're saying there's merging genres?
That people jump around, right? But I mean, when you look at what's popular, is really what I'm talking about, right? And it makes sense that would happen, fine. But we no longer take risks, right? There's nothing new out there for us to find, and there's no, you know, aside from an older director, someone who's made their way, who can put their imprint on a movie. Or someone that has the power even to be able to do that anymore, all the movies are the same. They could be directed by anyone or by no one. It doesn't matter at this point, right? I really don't think you even need really a director anymore. They're just, you know, a traffic cop on set at this point.
Really, the Jumanji remake, for all purposes, was Zathura with the space film that Jon Favreau did years ago. So that was, I'm sure, going to be...
And he's a director that actually you can feel
a
him
stylistic
in there.
Imprint.
Yeah, he has something.
Yeah, and say what you want about Bay, but, you know, Bay has the same problem.
Bay has it. I think there are new directors out there. Colin Trevorrow, I think, might actually be able to put a little bit of a spin on some stuff, and I'm interested to see how his and Rian Johnson's Star Wars movies are different from J.J. Abrams' bland thing. I'm surprised
because... Well, we might not get that one. Did you hear about this?
No.
We might not get the Trevorrow one. Oh, well, there's...
Oh, really?
Star Wars fans have now started an online petition that has gotten over 100,000 signatures, or I guess votes. I'm not sure how an online petition works exactly because I've never had the fucking free time to do stupid shit like this. But they want to replace Trevorrow with George Lucas.
Oh, yeah. I did hear about that. But that's obviously not going to happen.
You think? That's just the outfucking cry of just maniacs.
Yeah,
just
that's obviously not going to happen. I don't even think he would want to do that.
We have a new Robin Hood movie coming out, and it's 25 years after the last good one. Yes, we had the Russell Crowe, Ridley Scott thing.
There's a good one?
I'm not really sure what that was. I mean, you got to admit the Kevin Costner one's better than the Ridley Scott one.
That is true, but...
That's all I needed. Okay, so moving on.
It's a horrible movie.
My next thing was gonna be like, it has a better soundtrack at least, okay?
Well, it does.
It has not held up as well as some other movies from 91, say Point Break and Terminator 2 to name a few, but it nonetheless is still one of my movies from childhood. I always look at that movie kind of rosy. I get through rosy haze, and then I put it on, and I can't get through the first 10 minutes. However, they are making a movie, Robin Hood Origins, which is just what the world needs.
Yeah, and why is it called Robin Hood Origins?
It sounds like Young Hercules. It sounds like they should be on the CW, doesn't it?
Yeah, who titled it Origins? I mean, do we need an origin story for Robin Hood?
I thought we did. I thought we had one with Russell Crowe. Wasn't that the origins kind of story?
Isn't Robin Hood just kind of Robin Hood?
Can't we just already get him Robin shit?
I don't understand why. Yeah. It was the origin story. Okay. Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
It's going to star Adson. I can't say this kid's name. The little dude from Kingsman who is unfortunately in that really bad trailer, Eddie the Eagle, which I almost made you watch so we can talk about, you know, going full retard and having it backfire. But he's going to be starring as Robin Hood to probably offset that bad performance. And Little John has been cast as none other than Jamie Foxx. So they're really just throwing caution to the wind here in the casting department because last I checked, Jamie Foxx wasn't physically intimidating at all. And I remember,
why would he take this role? That's the thing I don't understand. I don't get this movie at all. I don't understand why this exists.
It's being written by the same guy who did the King Arthur.
That's not true.
Origins
I do know why. Yeah, I know.
She's doing. So it's open to write details of that.
Yeah, I mean, this is all an answer to Tarzan and all that stuff that's going on right now. They're really just so desperate for built-in audiences that they go back to this stuff.
Well, the idea of the tentpole, but now we only have X amount of tentpoles for certain studios, and you have people like Warner Brothers specifically desperate in search of other tentpoles outside of – they have nothing outside of – I mean, Disney has dual tentpoles. That's all they have, though.
Yeah.
I mean, and even Universal now is looking for other tentpoles outside of the Furious franchise. So they're trying to find, you know, with Minions and things like that. So they got Jurassic World, you know, reset up. So they're in good hands. But Warner Brothers is going to be the ones that's really searching. That's why we're getting Tarzan.
That's why we're getting a new Harry Potter movie.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's crazy. Crazy out there.
Let's take a quick break and we'll come back with our reviews of 6 movies.
This podcast is a proud member of the Lamb Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.
Why haven't you seen Jaws?
I've seen Finding Nemo. That's close enough, right?
Why haven't you seen The Usual Suspects?
Because I already know who Kaiser Soze is.
I can't believe you haven't seen Videodrome.
What? Has anyone seen Videodrome?
You haven't seen Psycho.
Okay. How about I start a podcast where someone will introduce me to one of these great movies I've never seen before, and in return, I'll have them watch a superhero movie. Film-wise, the Why Haven't You Seen This Film podcast. Find it on iTunes or Stitcher Radio.
Okay. Hit me with a review.
All right, I'll start off with a documentary I just recently saw called Listen to Me, Marlon, premiering on Showtime recently.
The Marlon Wayans documentary.
Yeah, the Marlon Wayans biodoc. This is about Marlon Brando, obviously. This was the Sundance hit last year. I believe it was in contention for Academy Award nomination, which I don't believe it got. But nonetheless, interesting documentary taken from the personal tapes of Marlon Brando. We recorded thousands of hours of himself talking, self-hypnosis tapes.
About what?
About his life, movies, just philosophical ramblings, readings of
Shakespeare. Basically a podcast.
Basically, he was doing a podcast every night. And just the guy was – I never liked Brando. I didn't – outside of The Godfather, of course, is great. I couldn't name another movie I ever particularly cared for him in outside of the first 10 minutes of Superman. But I did – after watching this documentary, I guess the best thing that could be said for this was that – it made me want to watch a few of his other movies, particularly Mutiny on the Bounty, which he sabotaged the production of and went into a 10-year exile because of. I'd seen On the Waterfront, but I always took his acting and Streetcar Named Desire. And outside of the kind of iconic images that he presented, I just thought it was always over the top. I mean, I'm not a big fan of method acting in the Stanislavski, Stella Adler school. I know it's very held high in circles and praised, but I thought it was over the top. So anyways, getting back to it, I just think that the documentary is a good documentary in changing your idea or making you want to at least revisit some movies. Last Tango in Paris.
It's just a cut-up of his recordings.
Right, but cut to interviews mm-hmm. and pictures and things like that. And he wanted to digitize his face, and he talked about going in and having his face digitized. And they have kind of this this face that's out in the middle of nowhere in the cyber world, kind of talking with his words sometimes. And it's a bit eerie and kind of beautiful at the same time. So it's a strange documentary about really a strange, eccentric man who was regarded as one of the greatest actors ever. But if you watch this, you realize he honestly gave up acting a long time before he stopped appearing in movies, really in the mid-70s. Yeah. And that's right after Godfather. He was somewhat kind of broken by the system. And by 1980, he was just doing it for money. And his on-set antics of getting lines delivered through earpieces in his ears and having cue cards held up, he admits, and he would get fat and obese and then crash diet for roles. And he eventually died a very lonely, obese, kind of confused man at 80s. It was just kind of a sad documentary, but interesting nonetheless. Hmm. All right, what did you see?
I finally got around to seeing the Fantastic Four remake, and yeah, it's really bad. It's as bad as everyone said, which
I
is
like
surprising.
To say, I told you on that one, because it is. It's universally panned, and it deserves it, right?
Yeah, I don't know how. I don't know how you make a Fantastic Four movie that's worse than the other three that are currently in existence. And it's like,
it makes you appreciate them, huh?
Oh yeah. Well, I already liked the other ones before, but there's been a couple movies that have come out recently where it's like you see the original and you just think, my God, you know, what were we complaining about back then? You know, and this is definitely one of those. I'm just surprised that they. You know, and Trank has everything that he said in defense of why this is so bad. You kind of have to feel that, that a lot of this is really on his shoulders, you know.
Squarely on.
It doesn't seem like this is a studio's at fault here. I don't know how the hell you would ever cut this into anything that would be worthwhile. You know, the characters really are never together in this movie. They separate from the beginning. And it's just people hanging around. My other complaint would be that they split the characters up too much, right? I mean, you never get a feel for them as a team or even them as separate. They really make Sue Storm seem like a stupid little girl, which is unfortunate, and she's at most of the time, it's the only voice of reason in the movie. It's not very good.
I thought the first scene worked with like a. I thought it
the
had
first
nice...
scene until you realize that it's going to be, you know, 10 minutes of them being little kids doing nothing.
I thought that at least had a 1980s explorers kind of feel to it. And I thought, okay, maybe this isn't going to be the debacle. And then I thought immediately when they killed the power and the kids being abused and blah, 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 I thought, oh man, now we're going on a strange path. And then they jump into them as very uninteresting teenagers or college kids, and like you said, they're split up. It's just the bad guy isn't really that bad.
How long is Michael B. Jordan in this movie? Honestly, I mean, it feels like a separate movie. Yeah, and he's just shows up. You know, Sue Storm's kind of there every once in a while. Mr. Fantastic, who is kind of the center point of this entire movie, disappears halfway through for a long time. It's like, who's the main character for this, for like that good 20 minutes? I don't know.
It feels rushed and lackadaisical at the same time. I can't.
It's poorly written. You know, I mean, it really just from the get go, this was a poorly conceived movie. And, you know, if someone wasn't that, I don't know, if Josh Trank couldn't stop this or see this problem and make a big enough deal to the studio that this movie sucks for these reasons, then, you know, that's, I feel like that's him. He failed, right? He failed this movie.
It's bad casting, basically, I think what it comes down to as well.
I think the casting's fine.
I didn't think any of the actors
aside
fit the parts. I didn't.
I mean, I'll agree with you on that, but my problem with that is that the Thing is CGI. He's nothing.
Yeah, that's right? A voiceover job for Jamie Bell.
If even that, because so it's nothing, right? It's totally unrecognizable. So that could be anybody.
What does the Thing do in the movie? What is his purpose in
nothing?
That
right. Just the so same as everybody else's. Miles Teller, I just don't. And Michael B. Jordan really, and as well as Kate Mara, they just don't have the screen time to have any effect on you. So I don't know that it's bad casting because, you know, the writing's so fucking terrible. I don't know anyone that would be able to take those roles and do much of anything with it.
I'll agree with you on that. Let's move on and talk about another movie that I'm on the fence about. This is a movie that has been hailed as a classic for the last 35 years. I've seen it in various formats, different cuts. I saw it on a big screen revival last week. This is Blade Runner I'm talking about. This was the director's cut. Gone is the voiceover narration. I'm not sure which, because there's about 9 different cuts, right? You on that
yeah,
box
don't
set
worry
that has
about
like,
it.
Like 4 yeah. or 5 different cuts, right?
Yeah, I'm so over it.
This is, though, I believe the 92 re-release cut, I think. But I'm not an aficionado of the Blade Runner thing. But this was a sold-out showing, and there were people with overcoats and the whole thing on. So yeah. I thought they were like trying to dress up with the characters. And there was a very, very crowded house for this. I was surprised. This movie holds up visually. The score is fantastic. The sound design. I didn't realize how much womp, womp, womp was in certain scenes that kind of led to an underlying feeling of anxiety of what was going to happen. That really worked. The compositions are beautiful. Cinematography is beautiful. But most of the Ridley Scott's work, including The Martian to some extent, leaves me so fucking cold that I just can't get into it. And I, once again, don't really give a shit about anything happening on screen story-wise in this movie. Do you find this movie has almost no story? I mean, it's very simply plotted.
Yeah. I mean, the story is pretty simple.
Why does Rutger Hauer save him at the end? I never understood that.
I don't know. There's a lot to this movie that you just don't really know.
Why does he pull him from falling? I've never understood. You go through all that trouble to chase him through the house to kill him. And he's about to kill him, and then you grab him. And the theory that I heard from somebody that was in the theater talking about it was that he was a replicant, that Harrison Ford's supposed
to
be.
Yeah, I mean, that's the major theory, right, throughout it. And that's why you have different cuts and stuff. You know, obviously, that's one of my issues with a lot of sci-fi is it's very open-ended. So you can go, you know, on forever about Blade Runner. But as a movie, you know, does it work?
It works as an experience, but it is slow.
An experience. Yeah. I mean, it's Ridley Scott doing some really great set design and stuff. He's always so good at creating a world.
Yeah.
But it is slow. I mean, I really like certain frames and stuff of this movie. I think it's a very cinematic film, even though it is slow.
It reminds me of the segment in Heavy Metal with Harry the Cab Driver, the future come to life. You know, it's like Fifth Element obviously was inspired by this. But there are scenes in this that, like I said, are beautifully constructed. It's so odd, the toys in the one toy maker's lab or the designer's lab and things like that that really play well even on the big – better on the big screen, I should say. But story-wise, I just feel like once they introduce that character and Daryl Hannah comes out and starts kind of romancing that character, we go into a very, very slow spot in that film for quite a while that – isn't even all that interesting visually for long periods. So, but I do like Edward James Olmos' work in this movie, and I've always liked that last sequence where Harrison Ford's leaving with Sean Young's character, and he finds that origami matchstick, you know, to let him know that he was there and he could have arrested him, but he didn't, you know. I thought that was the most. They should have cut the movie to me.
I think that's removed in some cut, isn't it? I don't know. It's so weird.
Is it? I like that about that. And I think they should have ended with him saying to Ford when he says, "You don't really think it'll work, do you?" and walks off, because I thought that would have been a nice film noir end, kind of like the Casablanca, the guy walking off in the rain. But instead, they tack on a few extra scenes there in the cut that I saw. But regardless, beautiful, but stilted.
Yeah.
All right. What you got?
I finally got around to seeing Maze Runner 2. Which I really liked the first one. I thought was pretty effective, you know. This is confused. I guess it would be the nicest thing I could say about it.
Even visually, it's confused.
Yeah, it's really just an odd movie. It's kind of just a lost, spiraling out of control storyline. I think really the problem is it's a middle book, story, whatever you want to say about it. it's like just filler, right? I mean, the whole thing is just filler. It's just them literally going from the city to the mountains, you know, the whole movie. And there happens to be zombies who sporadically show up here and there for no reason whatsoever.
Why are there zombies?
Other people, why are they not everywhere? Why are there only zombies sometimes and other times there's no zombies? And what's the deal with the infected people? And then some people like aren't infected and some people are immune, but you don't know who's immune. Obviously not everyone who's been told they're immune is immune.
Obvious. Come on. Every character is so fucking obvious.
Yeah, that's true as well. Which would be fine if it wasn't just, if the whole thing wasn't just, you know, a colossal waste of time to get someone from one place to another.
Way over long.
This is just a bridge from one movie to the other, you know, so I don't know. My only hope is that the next movie actually has some sort of a point to it, because this one just filler.
The first one was so intriguing with that premise of them on that island or wherever the fuck they were at, you know, and going through the maze, but this one, they're immediately off that, so you lose that initial kind of hook. And what are you left with? A bunch of, like I said, obvious characters doing obvious things that you're just waiting to play out. And it's got one, maybe two good sequences. The one is with they're hanging off the building that's crashed into the other one. That plays well, but that's a very little bit of that. But still, even that is very minor in a movie that runs 130 minutes and has about four false endings. I mean, this thing was relentless in its running time, I felt like. I was really let down by this because I was surprised and particularly enjoyed it. I thought it was one of the better young adult adaptations.
It's like a direct 180, you know, from everything that you liked about the first one, you know. This was everything that you would find wrong with a movie like this.
And you figure the second one should be picking up steam, right? Like Catching Fire was picking up steam by the second one.
Yeah, you're in the meat of it, you know, you'd think, but I guess with the Maze Runner, once you get out of the maze, you're done. You're just a runner. I don't know. You know what was there was just there was nothing left for them to do. You know, that's what I'm saying. This was like a filler. At least with Hunger Games, you know, you were never quite out of the Hunger Games. And even in the last book, when there were no more Hunger Games, you know, there were still Hunger Games, right? They found a way to make it work, and this just didn't. Had nothing. There was no maze running. Why is it called Maze Runner?
You saw the second Divergent film, right?
Yeah.
I haven't seen that yet. Now, is the second one of those as bad as this? Is it as much of a non-starter?
I think those are about as, you know, worthwhile as this, just in general, but they're better movies by far. But even though they're just, I don't know. Like, Hunger Games has something special to it, kind of like Harry Potter did, as opposed to Twilight, which, you know, they exist and they're movies and they're fine. And, you know, people like them and nothing against them. You know, that a lot of people like Divergent stuff. But to me, they just come off as kind of, you know, they just don't matter so much.
Yeah.
You know, but they're fine movies. Right. It's not that they're, you know, I could sit there and pick it apart. I mean, they're a little cheesy. They're not like The Giver, which is fucking horrendous.
Yeah, The Giver was the Pleasantville of these movies.
Yeah.
What do we got next? Pixels. I got around to seeing Pixels. I liked Pixels quite a bit. I'm a little bit ashamed to say that because it is the Razzie nominated film.
I don't think you should be. I didn't find anything wrong with this. You know, it was a Christopher Columbus delivered.
Yes. It was special effects were good. The comedy was on point. I laughed out loud a couple times when Josh Gad was doing his thing. I thought everybody had their moment to shine. Look, this isn't going to cure cancer, but if you want a generational comedy to watch, you could do a lot worse. And yeah, I thought this is amongst the better of the Sandler, you know, excluding That's My Boy, which is the rated R kind of oddity in his filmography the last 15 years. Uh-huh. This is amongst the better of what he's been putting out. And it's certainly better than The Ridiculous
just
Six.
Just like a grown-up kind of a version grown-ups.
Wait, 100%. But it speaks to really? a lot of levels, though, of his character. I mean, the guy, you know, he understands the patterns of the game, and kids today don't. You know, the games are so different, and this that. Yeah, I like all of this, and it has that kind of King of Quarters, you know, that documentary that we saw, kind of aspect to it as well. But well cast, with and well written for what it is, and Chris Columbus did deliver in this. This is sublimely directed. This is as really not as easily done as it looks.
I mean, this feels, you can tell that this is a Chris Columbus movie, you know.
This is polished, yeah.
Yeah, and it has that, as you say, that 90s slickness to it. This has that, you know. It really makes you feel like, I mean, the thing about movies in the 90s was that they were slick, but they had that. They still kept that amazement that the movies from the 80s had.
The wow factor.
I don't even know if I would call it the wow factor. It's really like an imagination zone or something. You know, like they really can just kind of, I don't know, tickle your brain just right, you know. And that Christopher Columbus does that great. I feel like he creates a world where I feel, you know, I guess safe would be the word I would use, which is weird, but.
He definitely creates polished work, in my opinion. And this
it's like Neverland, you know, really. It's like you can go, like Pixels is kind of like stepping into Neverland, you know, where everyone's a kid again.
I would feel it for that.
You know, and it's fun.
It's just a great little time, and I don't understand why this got such harsh reviews and did only, I guess, modest performance at the box office.
I thought they were way worse movies than this, yeah.
Way worse movies this year. I mean, this is amongst the better, like I said, of Sandler's last 10, 15 years easy. I really thought this was good. Check it out. Highly recommend it, actually. Check it out. I want to go back a few years and talk, or I want to go back and talk about something that came out a few years ago. I don't want to go back a few years.
You can't
years.
Go back.
Yeah. Please, God, no. Please, God, no. Don't do it to me. Yeah. Let's talk about Cloud Atlas, the Tom Hanks, Halle Berry, Wachowskis film that came out. This was Wachowskis and Tom Twyker. Twyker? I can't say this guy's name. He did Run, Lola, Run. Mm-hmm. But they did this collaboration on the film. 3-hour opus. This movie spans generational things. You loved this. At
generational
the time,
things.
I was on the fence, but
shit
I
happens.
was positive. But I rewatched it in its entirety. And mm-hmm. I got to say, I really found a lot of problems with this movie. I still do think it's brilliant in spots. And visually, like Blade Runner, I mean, it's almost without equal. Mm-hmm. But man, I can't remember being so frustrated with the pseudo talk and the kind of Matrix over talking. You know, I'm talking about the second Matrix, of course, with that one scene.
I didn't notice anything like that. I like the dialogue in this.
Really? You rewatched this? Yeah. You've seen this since the theater experience?
Yeah, but that was a while ago.
Okay.
So to be fair, yeah, I mean, it's not 100% fresh in my mind, but yeah, I mean, I thought it worked on the small screen as well.
I just remember it playing a lot better on the big screen for whatever reason, which you think a 3-hour film this complex would play better at home, but it did not. And I feel like once I got the point here, they kept hammering certain points home. And like I said, a couple of those scenes, I just felt like the dialogue was going around in circles just on purpose, much like that scene with the Maker. But beautiful visually. And the music in this, I mean, you got to give it up to the music. The score and that main theme is – the piano theme is gorgeous.
Yeah.
Gorgeous, gorgeous.
I still like it, so.
But the Wachowskis, man, I still think they're underrated masterpiece. I'm going to say it. It's Speed Racer.
Speed Racer.
I'm telling you, I think it's.
When's the last time you watched that?
Not for a while, but I fucking plan on putting that thing on soon.
Yeah, next we're going to hear. I really didn't think. I really found the Christina Ricci scenes were just not that good.
No, I think Speed Racer is brilliant visually and. Mm-hmm.
It is a lot of fun.
It is. It's fun. Like you say, the Chris Columbus
it is.
Safe zone, I felt like that when I watched Speed Racer.
Yeah, it has that same kind of a feel to it.
Let's get into the Trailer Attic portion of tonight's show.
Trailers can be wondrous things, giving us insight into the unseen movies of the future. But when they're bad, fire photon torpedoes. Shields up, red alert! Prepare for Trailer Addict.
Oh, we're prepared.
Been prepared, Captain.
I guess.
Captain's always on duty. Picard takes no breaks.
He can't.
Yeah, I mean, if he shits, he holds it till he's off duty.
No, he just, that's why the chair, you know, opens up on the bottom. Captain's chair.
It's a bidet. I knew it.
He's got a little, you know, the little peekaboo bottoms on.
I want to know why I've aged and Patrick Stewart has not. I'm just curious why he...
Well, if you're a captain of a starship, I guess you never die, because I think William Shatner will never die.
Well, apparently it doesn't work for captains of Star Wars ships, because Han Solo's biting the big one. But let's talk about trailers on today's show. J.J. Abrams, you sneaky little devil, you had a side project that he released. a trailer for the other night, or a teaser trailer, I guess it would be more appropriately titled, 10 Cloverfield Lane, an unofficial spin-off, prequel, side story, something to do with Cloverfield. It really looks like, but more of an intimate story.
Yeah, it really looks like it doesn't matter.
Yeah, exactly.
It has anything to do with Cloverfield, so I don't understand that. Well, I mean, doesn't that just kind of, I mean, I get it. It's a cool idea to kind of like tie those worlds together that have nothing to do with each other, but doesn't it kind of ruin it in a way? Because you know there's a better movie outside of that fucking, you know, room.
I'm only interested in this to see what kind of performance John Goodman puts off. Otherwise,
it'll be great.
I'm done with this kind of trickery and shit like that. This is not, you're not being clever anymore. This is, to me, that was a cash grab. This could have been just his own little Blumhouse type production, you know, a little small.
That's what I'm saying. I would rather have.
You didn't need to cheapen it up by, you know, connecting.
It kind of ruins it a little bit because, I mean, I guess I just don't get it. Why would you make a Godzilla movie and then have it just be some dudes in a room? You know, it's not, it doesn't seem like it makes sense to me. Why can't they? It would to me anyways, it would feel more impactful if I knew that there wasn't a giant monster outside. You know, why is he really keeping them in that room? When you give the hint that it's a Cloverfield thing, doesn't it kind of ruin it? Because then, I don't know, even if he's a bad guy, he still has a reason to keep them there. I don't know. It seems like it ruins the impact.
Yeah, like the plot point has been, or the sympathy is not being given to the characters that you would expect. But this trailer, it still looks cheap and not very intriguing. Like I said, I only want to see it for Goodman's presence.
But, he's always good, so it's a good reason to see a movie if you just want to watch John Goodman.
All right, next we got Free State of Jones. This is a Civil War thriller / action film with Matthew McConaughey from STX Entertainment. This is a studio that gave us The Gift last summer. They're specializing in these modestly budgeted films with stars attached to kind of make back an opening weekend. They might have their hands really full here with this. I don't know how sellable this film is going to be. This looks, I mean, like an interesting story and somewhat intriguing in spots, but I think this could be playing on the History Channel with the likes of Hatfield and McCoys and things like they're doing.
Well, it looks better than that. I will say that. I don't know. This does look like a movie rather than just something that would be on TV or on the History Channel.
Well, it's directed by Gary Ruse, right? Hunger Games.
Right, right. So it's, yeah, so it definitely has, you know, the upper echelon feel to it. The thing that I'm most amazed is that, you know, 19th century Matthew McConaughey is exactly the same as 20th and 21st century Matthew McConaughey.
And he fits in well everywhere.
I mean, exactly the same. No difference whatsoever. Yeah, he's literally just Matthew McConaughey. Like, he could be Matthew McConaughey in any time era, and he would be Matthew McConaughey.
You'd be proud to know him in 1492 or 1720.
It would just work.
It is what it is. I actually think this does look okay, though, for what it was going. I'm not sure what I thought it was. I thought it was a Civil War reenactment movie.
It does. Yeah, I know. I was thinking, is there a little twist here? Is this not real?
Yeah.
But yeah, it does. It looks better than I thought it would have wound up looking, to be honest with you. So it is a little intriguing, but I don't see a point. I guess I will say this about your TV comment. I don't see a point in seeing this on the big screen.
Yeah, this is absolutely a lazy afternoon at home movie.
Yeah.
All right. Speaking of, the next film is Misconduct with an all-star cast of Al Pacino and Anthony Hopkins. And
what?
Then we
I
have
thought, no,
the lightweights
I thought,
of Josh Duhamel and Malin Ackerman.
You're crazy. This is Malin Ackerman. I love her. She's not a lightweight. This is the Harrison Ford, Gary Oldman movie. I think you're crazy. I don't know what movie you're watching. Is that a new thing now? Is this a new genre? Two old dudes fight over the young stud?
You're talking about, the one with Liam Hemsworth, right? I can't even think of the name.
Right, I can't think of it either.
I saw it. I reviewed it on the site. My goodness.
Hot Buns Hemsworth? Who knows?
Yeah, Miley's man. Can't think of it. But this is Misconduct we're talking about. And this is about a lawyer going after a bigwig. And the bigwig sends somebody after. No, because then it turns into Fatal Attraction halfway.
Because it seems like Al Pacino's barely in this.
Oh, this is a one scene by Al Pacino.
Hopkins, yeah. They say some lines. By the way, wow, do both of them look old.
This is like
that makes me feel old. Yeah, it's like whoa. Wow.
Well, this is why they're doing these kind of movies too. I'm sure they're not getting offered great
roles. I'm sure, and I'm sure they don't want to probably sit around on, you know, a set. It takes a lot of energy, I'm sure. So yeah, but it's just so. It's not demeaning is not the right word, but what is it? It's cheap, right? Cheapens them a little bit. It feels like.
I just think that I heard Samuel L. Jackson one time say, "Actors act, and you know, you do it all the time." So I think that they want to continue not only cash and paychecks, which is obviously the thing, but they want to continue making movies.
I'm not saying they don't do that, but this movie specifically, and these types of movies where it's where we have a cheap movie, who can we get? Let's get a couple of old dudes that people will recognize and put them in these shit roles for 2 seconds and have them. You know,
class up
say whatever they're going to say, yeah, and be done with it. I mean, when you look at who they're hiring people who deliver lines very specifically so they can get those trailer moments.
Which they do here, and this thing feels like a trailer to a movie that, you know, I can't believe they actually made the movie. It's like John Grisham meets Fatal Attraction. I'm sure it was the pitch.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't get it. And of course, the puppet master, Anthony Hopkins, apparently, I don't know.
Which they give away in the trailer, so why would you see the fucking movie?
Yeah, I don't know why you would see this movie, because there's no mystery or intrigue in this.
Well, one of the lines Dumelig says is, "I know who did this, and I'm going after him." It's like, we know who did this, motherfucker. I've been watching things for 90 seconds.
Yeah. Yeah, we got it. All right, let's move on to a movie that I wonder, you know, are we really running out of true stories to tell at this point? Elvis and Nixon?
I thought this actually looked intriguing.
Of course you did. This is totally worthless. Why? This looks whimsical for about 10 minutes. Can you imagine this being a feature-length movie? Nothing fucking happens in this thing. This is Michael Shannon jerking off and and Kevin Spacey loving it. I don't know.
That actually would probably be a good behind-the-scenes documentary supplement on the DVD. This is maybe going to be worrisome because Kevin Spacey will now be running Relativity, the film production, you know, as a studio head. So you're going to get a lot more whimsical shit like this coming from him. But didn't they do this before? Wasn't this an HBO, made-for-HBO film years ago?
I kind of thought so, but I don't know.
I thought Frank Langella had done this with somebody else playing the role.
Did play Nixon, but I don't know if it was this per se. I mean, this is very centered around this.
Philip Baker Hall played Nixon in a great movie in the mid-80s, and I can't think of the fucking name right now. But look that up on IMDb if you're out there listening. If you're looking for a great, it's a Robert Altman film, I believe, in the mid-80s.
People love Nixon, apparently. You know, he's such a character.
Shit.
It's just, I mean, yeah, I don't know. I this movie just doesn't seem important to me at all. I don't know any fans of Elvis that would give a shit. I don't really know any fans of Nixon that would give a shit. And quite honestly, it's a story that doesn't seem worth telling. I don't understand the movie.
It's coming. Nonetheless, this is an Amazon studio.
Well, Michael Shannon's coming. I don't know.
And I thought Michael Shannon was looking pretty good in this role. And
Yeah, the acting's great. I mean, you know, Kevin Spacey was doing a pretty good Nixon.
It's a regular HBO type film. If this hadn't been one, you know, yeah. Life and Death of Peter Sellers along those lines, kind of satirical and poking fun, but probably be trying to make a statement of some sort.
But then that would make more sense to be something in there because you have a built-in audience who, you know, if it doesn't hit, no one gives a fuck.
But Shannon's been on a roll, man. Everything he's been touching, he's been getting nominated for. I mean, I'm not sure what Michael Shannon
he's really good,
turned into
though.
One of
I
our
like
greatest
him.
Actors, but he's quietly becoming a very strange presence to watch on screen. And I mean, even this Midnight Special he's coming out next is going to be, I think, something to watch. We talked about that a while back.
Yeah, I agree. That one looks good.
Let's talk about the horror anthology Southbound, coming from the guys who did VHS. This is a bike. This trailer is fucking intense. I didn't realize it was an anthology at first. I was thinking, my God, there's a lot of stories.
Have you seen the VHS stuff?
I haven't caught that series, but I've caught movies that they've done on their own. Your Next is one of the ones that I thought was pretty good, that this director, Joe Swanberg, Swanson, I believe his name is, was part of that whole, this troupe. So,
yeah, I'll say, you know, the anthology movies, I don't really get. I don't think they work a lot of times. But the VHS ones really do. They're pretty damn creepy. And the way that they're selling this, specifically the Southbound movie, as kind of a crossroads of a Twilight Zone type thing is really neat to me. The idea that, and you know, the VHS movies were kind of interconnected in the sense that you were watching, a collection of VHS tapes that were together for some reason. But this is really seems interconnected in the same area, in the same, world, somehow overlapping, weirdness. And it seems to be pretty damn horrific.
I mean, in effective.
I mean, some of it, the skeleton thing that's flying around it, right, that's a joke. But my God, some of the other shots in this were just like, oh, shit.
Yeah, this looks like it's, I mean, the anthologies to me, I always think of like the Japanese stuff, which is really hard to watch.
Yeah, I agree with that. You should check out the VHS stuff. Has been streaming for a while. So if you're interested, I would check them out. I thought they were surprisingly good. Yeah, because like you say, the Japanese stuff, it was really hit and miss.
So I'll give that a shot because I do think that these guys are not only in love with the genre and it shows through. It's not like they're doing it for quick buck or exploitation.
Well, you
they
get
like
hit.
They really,
cutting them down to short movies though, you get hit with it right away. You know, it's really like, okay, here's the start. You know, ease into it a little bit, set the scene, and then bam, here's the horror. So it's kind of
you cut the filler.
It's kind of a good, yeah, exactly. It's kind of a it makes for a really good roller coaster ride when it comes to like a horror movie thing because you're up and down, rather than so many horror movies nowadays have like a cold open little scary thing, and then the first act is just fucking boring.
Right, where we're just counting off minutes so they can make a feature length running time.
Yeah.
Well, I think another horror, genre master at this point is James Wan, who really is stepping away from the Furious franchise. F. Gary Gray is going to do Part 8, Fast 8, or as Trevor calls it, Faced.
Feast. I want it to be Feast.
Faced.
Feet. Fates. Feast. I think it should be Feast.
Better than yeast is all I know.
Feast.
And now we have James Wan going back to The Conjuring, which was his biggest hit outside Insidious. But he really wanted to do this. And I never saw the first Conjuring. I was told it was great.
Here's my problem. The first Conjuring is fucking awesome. It's really good.
Annabelle, I heard, sucked, though.
Really? I actually kind of thought Annabelle was pretty decent as well. My problem with The Conjuring 2 is that it's nothing like either Annabelle or The Conjuring. This looks like every other demon horror movie that I've seen in the past 5 years.
So you didn't think there was anything special in this
trailer?
No,
I thought this just looked like shit. You know, this just looks like someone made another movie and, there's going to be... The thing about The Conjuring is that it's so low-key, it feels like it could be real. But movies like this don't, like The Conjuring 2, like this trailer, they don't feel real to me. So it's just, I don't know. And it's not really scary to me, I guess.
It's too much money to play with? That they started getting away with the...
I think there's no story, right? I think that's the problem with these movies is that there's just no story. So this is going to be exactly the same. You know, a person's going to get, infected, if you will, or whatever, howbeit. And then someone's going to have to come along and pull them out. I don't know. It just looks like, I mean, you tell me the difference between this trailer and any of the other stuff that, or any of the Insidious trailers.
I thought the last Insidious trailer was pretty interesting, which the girl was knocking on the wall and in the text message.
But how is this different? I mean, why does The Conjuring, which clearly was pretty different than Insidious, I thought. Although, obviously, okay, they're the same fucking thing, fine. But in tone and in what it is, they're very different. So why does The Conjuring now have to be exactly like Insidious? Because Insidious has worked before, I guess.
Proven to be a hit, right?
But why does it have to be the same? Why do you have to do that? Why can't The Conjuring be a little bit less, I don't know. I mean, the first Conjuring does end big, too big, I think. I think horror movies go too big at the end as well.
I thought the most effective horror movie I've seen recently or in the last couple of years was Deliver Us From Evil. Did you see that?
I don't think so, no.
Eric Bana and Joel McIntyre, who you wouldn't – is that his name from Community, Joel McIntyre? Joel McHale. Thank
Joel
you.
McHale. Yeah,
I'm thinking Joe McIntyre. Joel McIntyre, who worked at the Apple shop on Locust and Third. No, surprisingly, he makes a pretty good action hero. And that movie is a pretty fucking creepy quasi based on a true story type deal.
I have to watch that.
Yeah, Deliverance from Evil, I really recommend. I know you like these kind of movies, and I was surprised how much that one got under my skin. Great cast, too. And Olivia Munn's in it. A lot of people in it.
Oh, I like Olivia Munn.
All right, well, that's going to wrap up episode 294 for all of our listeners out there. We want to thank you guys for your years of support. I'm going up now on almost 300 episodes, if you can believe it or not. Next week, we'll be back with the Dick Tracy Retrospective podcast. I know you guys have been clamoring for a look back on movies. We're going to go back 26 years, can you believe it, and look at Dick Tracy all over again. Speaking for Trevor Anderson, I'm Jason Rugard, and we are the Movie Mavericks.
Oh my, another magnificent episode has come to an end. If you're craving more, set your destination to moviemavericks.com/warp9. Engage!